Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.
By law, 21 plus terms and conditions apply.
Well, well, campers, Merry Christmas to all you brave souls. I'll admit I wasn't expecting such a crowd tonight. Christmas night itself. Thought you'd all be curled up by the fire with cocoa and leftovers, but here you are. And I'm glad, because it wasn't so long ago that telling ghost stories on Christmas night was just as much a tradition as decorating trees or hanging stockings. Now that's a tradition I'd love to see make a comeback. But for now, I'll do my part to keep it alive. So, thanks for braving the cold to join me here at Camp Duskwood by our crackling fire under the snowy sky. Bundle up tight. Forecast says we're in for flurries and gusts of wind. Just the kind of night where shadows get a little bolder, don't you think? Let's see who made it tonight. Ah, Ryan, back again. You've been a regular since the beginning, haven't you? And Janice, 7 weeks running, my fearless camper. Dylan, glad to see you braved the chill again after last week's grave dealings. And who's this? Lizzie, you say? Well, Lizzie, welcome to our fire. Ryan here says you've got an appetite for eerie tales. Good thing you came, because tonight we've got two that'll chill you to the bone. I promise you won't leave here the same as you came. Last week, we traveled to the foggy streets of old Edinburgh, but tonight, we're heading into the icy grip of winter, and then to a Christmas like no other. Ready? Let's dive into our first tale. Our first story tonight comes from none other than Eric Peabody. Now, if you haven't heard of Eric yet, let me fill you in. He's not just a good friend of mine and an incredible author. No, no. Eric's also an accomplished musician and actor. And here's a fun fact for you, campers. Eric's the host of a spine-tingling podcast of his own called Horror Hill. You can check it out later on your smartphones, Spotify, Apple, you name it. But for now, settle in for one of his best. This tale takes place on a cold, snowy night in the middle of nowhere, where silence can be a blessing or a warning. Here's The Winter Babysitter, written by Eric Peabody. Well, let's get one thing out on the table right at the start. I recognize that this explanation here is likely going to be fairly difficult for all you to believe, and the last thing I want to do is make this even harder to swallow by beating around the bush. There's a saying in the self-help world about eating the frog, which is to say, whatever the ugliest, grossest, most difficult to stomach part of a task is, well, you should just step right up and take care of that part first. Get it out of your way, so it's not hanging around over your head while you do the rest of your work. In my 45 years on this earth, I've found that to be pretty decent advice, and I've done my best to follow it whenever possible. Still, things are sometimes easier said than done. It has not escaped me that I'm still talking around the edge of this thing without actually tackling it head on. Maybe part of it is that I still don't quite believe all of it myself, even with a horror show still drying upstairs and writing something down on paper has a way of legitimizing things. Once you write a thing down, you have to look at it and decide if it's a good representation of reality. If it is, then you've helped define the shape of something. If it's not, then all you're really doing is looking at evidence of your own insufficiency, nor worse, your own insanity. So, for whatever it's worth, here it is. Santa Claus is real. He's real. And he's a murderer. I hope you're not waiting for a punchline, because there is no punchline. Not only is this not a joke, but a punchline symbolizes the end of a story, and that's not quite where we are. I'm writing this down, not because this whole weird situation's over, which it isn't, but because it's the first chance I've had to actually collect my thoughts. And don't get me wrong, I'd love to have all of this put behind me, but I'm starting to think that might not actually happen. And the chance that I'm unable to follow up on this letter, I guess having a partial account of things is better than nothing. I'm probably kidding myself if I think that this won't all still get placed at my feet, but you can only do what you can do. All right, the frog's eaten. Now we can get on with the rest of it. This whole situation started yesterday, when our little corner of Montana lost both power and phone service on December 24th. I'm about a half hour north of Glasgow, which is itself smack dab in the middle of nowhere. It's pretty country, mostly hills and plains, but in the depths of winter, it turns into a pure white vista that stretches as far as you can see in any direction. I generally don't mind. I've lived here my whole life, and the isolation part is part of the appeal. I get my firewood delivered at the start of the season. I've got a large freezer full of venison and other meat down in the cellar. And sometimes you just have to hunker down for a month or so with a few good books to keep you company. I drove long-haul trucking through my earlier years and was smart with my money, so these days I live off of interest and keep things simple. I've never been one to need much company, and driving into town a few times a month to grab a beer was enough to keep me feeling like I was part of the community. Most of my time is spent tending to the house and property, keeping my small vegetable garden, and watching whatever DVDs the mailman brings from Netflix. I'm just as surprised as you are that they still offer that service, but it works perfectly for a Luddite like myself. I have a computer, but outside of the occasional email to family, I don't use it for much. I've been here since 2005. And I spent 13 years being perfectly happy in my quiet, out-of-the-way sanctuary before John Percival and his family moved in down the road. Looking at that written down the road, seems to imply a bit more distance than is actually involved here. The road in question, Alpine Drive, branches off Highway 24, then twists through the hills in a roughly eastern direction, before terminating at a small river a few miles past my house. When I bought the place, there was only one other house on Alpine, and that was near the intersection with 24. I could go whole weeks without seeing someone else, if that was my inclination, and it frequently was. Then John and his family decided to have their god-awful McMansion built out here. If I decided to get in my car and drive over to visit, which is a thing I cannot fathom doing, it would take me about 10 minutes to navigate the road and arrive at their driveway. In reality, their house is not 1/4 mile from mine, just, oh, 2 hills over. That means that I'm graced on a daily basis with the sight of that abomination of architecture, and that every sound from their house drifts an easy distance on the wind right over to my ears. I can best describe John as being a privileged piece of trash. He was tall and thin, with a posture that seemed determined to make him look like a vulture. For some reason, he insisted on keeping a beard on his face, if you could call those loose scraggle of wiry hair a beard. To the best of my knowledge, he does something with computers, but we never talked enough for me to get all the basics. I endured 6 months of disruptive construction while they're building his house before I even had a chance to meet the man. And though I did my best to keep an open mind even then, he didn't do himself any favors. I'd gone over one weekend afternoon with a six-pack of Coors and a box of cookies for his family to introduce myself, doing the best I could to think of to be neighborly. Within 5 minutes of opening the door, John had suggested to me that I was somehow being inconsiderate to bring something with so much sugar, and that he hadn't drunk Coors since he had been slumming it with the scholarship kids at college. I yelled out another 15 minutes before finding some excuse and heading home, but still had the misfortune to meet his wife and son. Melinda was loud and condescending, with the type of laugh that would cause even a Buddhist monk to think about grabbing her neck and throttling her. And Max was worse. He was clunked down on the couch when I walked in, greasy hair hanging in his face and a shirt that advertised a band with a name so offensive I won't repeat it. He didn't bother looking up or saying hello, focused on some handheld video game. He didn't say one word to me the whole time I was there, but his snickers and eye rolls didn't escape me during my brief conversation with his father. When I started to tell John about myself, as one will do when they first meet someone, Max interrupted me with a loud yawn. I stopped talking, hoping, but by that point not expecting, John to tell him to not be rude. Instead, Max turned to his dad and asked, "What's that smell?" before shifting his eyes back to me. "Well, I was working in my garden a bit earlier. You might be smelling some of the compost from that," I replied. Max looked at me a moment longer, then turned back to his dad. "Why'd we move here if all the locals smell terrible?" he asked, and then got up and left the room. I somehow managed to keep my calm while I ended my conversation with John, who didn't offer any sort of apology for his son's behavior. That was the last time I'd seen Max up close until yesterday, though I was constantly aware of his presence. In the following weeks and months, I was gifted with the comprehensive education in the world of extreme heavy metal. Max played his music loud with his windows open, and wouldn't you know it, his room faced toward my house, an uninterrupted quarter of a mile away. My afternoons gardening were now accompanied by the soothing tones of bands like Morbid Angel, Cannibal Corpse, and Carcass. I was only able to identify them after my constant exposure granted me the ability to start recognizing some of the growled, barked, and shrieked lyrics, and I looked up those snippets online. I wasn't at all interested in the music, but I felt the need to at least put a name to them. Did I mention that there's not a lot to do out in the middle of nowhere? So that was my life for the next, year or so. John and his charming family moved in late September 2018. As of this writing, I've spent 15 months in the aural shadow of a dumb teenager with terrible taste in music. I started going into town more and also spent more time inside than outside, so that the music would be at least a little muffled. I tried talking to John about it a few times, but he wasn't interested in meeting me halfway. In his eyes, he had paid good money to live where he did, and it wasn't his problem if anyone else disliked his family's lifestyle. I'm not particularly comforted by the fact that Max is now dead. He was a horrible kid, but horrible kids sometimes turn out okay, all things said and done. At the very least, he deserved a chance. I will not miss his constant bombardment on my life, but I would never have wished serious ill upon him. Still, I suppose there is some irony in the fact that his bedroom now looks like the album art for one of those revolting CDs he listened to. I was there. I saw it. I suppose that brings me to the actual issue at hand. I mentioned that the whole thing started yesterday. But I guess it actually goes back a bit farther than that. 2 weeks ago, on the 12th or so, John Percival knocked on my door. It was the first time he'd ever come over, and I'm not really quite sure if he was looking for help or delivering a veiled threat. As I mentioned, the Percivals and I weren't on the most friendliest of terms, and I can only imagine what their thoughts of me were. If I had to guess, to them, I was some backwater dimwit that happened to live nearby and had been a thorn in their side about their son and his behavior. I heard the knock around noon. I put down my sandwich and went to answer the door, and when I opened it, I saw John. I didn't invite him inside, and he didn't ask. It had been cold out, as the middle of December usually is, but we'd had a few days of unseasonably warm weather, and he didn't look too uncomfortable in his turtleneck sweater and jeans. The snow had even started to melt. I was more than a little surprised to see John at my door. The sound of blast beat drums and screeching guitars drifted in the front door from their house. After a moment, I said, "Hi, John," but didn't have a chance for more before he cut me off. Maybe I would have invited him in if I'd gotten the opportunity. Who knows? "So, Melinda and I are going out in town for a while," he said, with a tone like I was the one imposing on him. "We're visiting some family in Florida. Max is staying here. He doesn't like flying, and he's old enough to take care of himself for a few weeks. I trust there won't be any trouble." That last sentence had an odd inflection, and I wondered if he was questioning the wisdom of leaving Max home alone, or if he was telling me not to start anything with the kid. Okay, I responded. I wasn't sure what John was actually looking for here. He reached into his pocket and withdrew a small something, which he handed me. "Here's the number we'll be at," he said, and I saw with some amusement that it was his business card, with a handwritten phone number on the back. "If anything happens, this is how you can reach us. He hesitated for a moment, his eyes darting over my shoulder into the living room. "You do have a phone, right?" "Yep," I said, not missing a beat. "I traded a couple of jugs of moonshine for one last year." "Okay, good," he replied, missing the sarcasm. "We should be back by the first of the year." He hesitated for a moment, apparently searching his brain for anything that he had missed. "All right, then. Goodbye." And with that, he started to walk down the front steps and toward the driveway, where I could see his BMW. No thank you, no Merry Christmas, no nothing. After watching him for a moment, I closed the door and went back to my lunch. So, my Christmas gift from my lovely neighbors was a couple of thankless weeks spent making sure their horrible child didn't die in their absence. I was irritated, sure, but more by John's presumption and general attitude than I was by the actual task. Even though Max was a terrible little kobold, I figured he could find a way to survive without starving or burning the house down for a few weeks. It would probably be business as usual for me, just living my life and doing my best to ignore the omnipresence of Max's music. I made a mental note to take a look toward their house a few times a day, just to make sure that it hadn't sunken into the earth or anything. I figured that it wouldn't be too much of a headache, and even though John was an unappreciative jerk, helping out was still the neighborly thing to do. How wrong I was. Things went about as I expected for a while. I made a point of stepping outside a couple of times each day and taking a gander across the distance between my house and John's. It was more or less unchanged each time, an opulent, out-of-place atrocity sitting in an otherwise beautiful vista. In the evenings, a few lights were on, no matter what time of day it was, and abrasive buzzsaw music drifted over to me, slightly muted by the blanket of snow lying on top of the hills. That was it. I kept to myself, staying inside more frequently, when the weather turned cold again a few days after John and Melinda left. It was snowing regularly again, but I still went out to take a look at their house at least twice a day. After all, even though I hadn't volunteered for this, I hadn't put my foot down and refused it either. For better or worse, I had some amount of responsibility here. As I already mentioned, the power and phones went out on Christmas Eve. It happened fairly early in the day, right as I was having some oatmeal for breakfast. I'd been watching a DVD of Jingle All the Way, which is a god-awful movie, but one I always feel compelled to watch around the holidays. One moment, Arnold was running through a shopping mall, scarf trailing behind him, and the next, nothing. The TV shut off, the lights went out, and things got quiet. I could still hear the crackling of the fire in the fireplace, but it took me a few moments to realize that was all that I could hear. For the first time in months, there was no death metal dancing at the periphery of my hearing. True, I was without power, but so was Max. It put a smile on my face. After finishing my breakfast, I went outside and looked over at the Percival's house. It briefly crossed my mind to go over and check on the kid, but I quickly dismissed it. My truck had four-wheel drive, but it would still be a bit of a trek over there, and my only thanks would likely be a healthy dose of snide remarks. I made a mental note to check in an hour to see if smoke was coming out of their chimney. If it was, then Max would have gotten a fire started and would probably be just fine. I didn't know if the power would be out for 10 minutes or 10 days, but my experience has been that it tended to take a while for the power company to fix things this far out in no man's land during the winter. I went back inside, tossed on an extra sweater, and sat down with a book. The majority of that day was peaceful in a way that I had truly missed. Sure, there were no lights or television, but it was the first true silence I had in months, and I was relishing it.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
I'd looked out the window toward John's house around noon and had seen smoke drifting out of the chimney. The house didn't appear to be on fire, so I figured things were all right. I returned to my book. Hours later, around 6 in the evening, I checked on Max again and nothing appeared changed. It was full of dark out and there was no reason to stay up, so I turned in for the night and went to sleep. Somewhere in the middle of the night, I woke up suddenly to the sound of glass breaking. It was so quiet that for a minute I thought I was dreaming. Then I heard the distant sound of someone shouting and came awake. I had no idea what time it was, and my brain was still foggy with sleep. The first thing I thought was that Max had broken into my house for some reason or another. Then, as I continued to come into consciousness fully, I realized that the sounds were muffled and couldn't have come from within my house, which only left one option. I stumbled out of bed and into the kitchen, which had the closest window facing the Percival's house. I could see what looked like the light of a battery-powered electric lamp in one of the uproom stairs, and shadows were moving back and forth in front of it. It was too far away for me to make out details, but my first impression was that there was some struggle going on. I started to turn away from the window, planning on getting over to the house as quickly as possible. But then something caught my eye and I stopped. The sky was clear and the moon was mostly full, so there was just enough ambient light for me to notice that something was strange about their house. I couldn't make out details at the distance, but it looked like some amorphous shape was on their roof. I decided that I didn't have time to puzzle out what was going on. There was obviously something bad happening, and whether or not I liked the kid, he needed my help. I tossed on some warm clothes, my good boots and my hat, and then opened the gun safe in the closet. Just like every self-respecting Montana man, I was a hunter and a gun enthusiast. The safe wasn't locked unless I went to town, so it was quick business to open it up and grab the Mossberg 12-gauge. With that in hand, I pocketed a small LED flashlight and went out into the night. I didn't even consider driving over. It would take too long and would also announce my presence to anyone that was in the house. I wasn't sure what I was about to walk into, but I figured it would be best to have the element of surprise. Besides, I was used to hiking in snow, and I figured I could make it to the house in about 10 minutes. I stood on my porch for a moment, looking over toward the house and seeing that what there was to see. There wasn't much. The light was still on in the window, but I could no longer see any movement in front of it. There was also still something on the roof, but it was too dark and far away to make out. I started walking. About 12 minutes later, I was at the front door. It was hideously quiet. I tried to see what was on the roof as I was approaching, but the angle was wrong, and I decided it wasn't worth circling the house to get a better look. The shotgun was in my left hand as I gently tried the doorknob with my right. It was unlocked. The door swung open slowly and noiselessly. There was still a fire burning low in the fireplace, and it cast a flickering glow across the large, high-ceilinged living room. I stood there on the threshold for a moment, holding the shotgun in a low, ready position, and making sure that none of the dancing shadows were more than they appeared to be. After I was convinced that I'd seen all there was to see, I stepped in. The snow, trapped in the treads of my boots, made light crunching noises on the tile floor of the entryway, and I silently swore under my breath at the noise. The lower story was mostly comprised of an open floor plan, which meant that I had a decent view of the living room, kitchen, and dining room. All of that was roughly to my left, with a stairway just to my right leading up to the second floor. I hesitated. This was a big house. For a moment, I considered trying to systematically make sure the lower floor was empty before heading upstairs, but quickly dismissed that notion. I wasn't a soldier or a cop, and I didn't know the first thing about the proper way to go about any of this. All I knew was that something was wrong, and I'd seen a light and movement up on the second floor. Tightening my grip on the shotgun, I approached the stairs. The light from the fireplace only reached about halfway up the staircase before dying out, and the rest was hooded in darkness. There was a dim glow at the top, probably cast down a hallway from the lamp in Max's room. It struck me that I was only assuming that the light was from Max's room, and the thought made me realize again that I had no idea what I was doing. There could be 10 rooms upstairs, for all I knew. As much as I hated to do so, I'd have to use the flashlight. It was a bright little thing, and anyone in the house would immediately know where I was when I turned it on. I brought it out and turned it on, placing it awkwardly in my left hand, which was also holding the firearm used to pump shells into the shotgun. Thus armed, I started up the stairs. My whole body was a bundle of nerves. Every few steps, I'd stop, thinking I heard something. The stairs weren't carpeted, and every time I put my foot down, I was acutely aware of each squeak, groan, and scuff that my boots made on the bare wood. My eyes were glued to the top of the stairway, and I expected that at any moment the dim glow from the battery lamp would be occluded as someone stepped in front of it. The one calming thought in my mind was that there was practically no chance I would miss if I had to fire the shotgun. This was quickly followed by a reminder to myself not to pull the trigger until I knew who I was looking at. The last thing I needed to do was smear Max all over the far wall. By the time I was nearing the top of the stairs, something else had started to draw my attention. There was a smell up here, and it wasn't a good one. I'd done enough hunting to recognize the odor of a butchered animal, and that's exactly what I was smelling. There was something else mixed with it, and I wasn't quite able to place it. It was something that reminded me of visiting my grandparents' farm when I was a kid. At the top of the stairs, I waited, trying to figure out what to do. The stairs formed a T-shaped intersection with a hallway, and a light was coming from a partially open door down toward the right. Looking both ways, I could see several doors in each direction. It again crossed my mind to try to do some sort of systematic search, but I quickly dismissed it. If there was some burglar or a psychopath in here, they likely knew that I was there too. If they had decided to hole up in some other part of the house, either to hide from me or to ambush me, there wasn't much that I could do about it. I needed to make sure Max was okay before I did anything else. The light from the room to the right was bright enough for me to see that the hallway itself was empty. I turned off my flashlight and put it back in my pocket. Doing my best to walk quietly, I went down the hall to the right toward the source of the light. After taking only a few steps, I stopped. There was a sound, something that I hadn't heard from the staircase. It was scratching, a rustling sound, and I had no idea what it could be. It seemed to be coming from the room ahead of me. I continued approaching, hyper-aware of how I placed each booted step, staying as silent as I could. 10 steps later, I stood outside the room. The door was ajar, but I couldn't see much inside. Just one wall and the edge of what appeared to be a bed. I could see something dark splattered on part of the wall, and the smell had gotten much worse. The scratching sound was still coming from inside, and though it was louder, I still had no clue as to what was causing it. My heart was racing. I realized that I was holding my breath. I forced myself to take 2 deep, quiet breaths, trying to settle my nerves. Using the muzzle of the shotgun, I slowly pushed the door open. It was just a bit after dawn right now, as I'm sitting here, writing all of this down, and things seem different with the sun coming up. Part of me wants to walk back upstairs to Max's room, to convince myself that I wasn't imagining all of this. There's dried blood in my hands, and I suspect that's enough evidence, but it still doesn't seem real. I've almost gone back upstairs a few times to make sure, but I wasn't going to do that earlier, not when it was still dark, because if it was real, then who's to say it wasn't back up there waiting for me? Now that there's some light in the sky, that fear has diminished some, but it also makes me less and less sure that this all actually happened. I'm sitting here in this modern house like something out of a TV show. It's a beautiful winter morning outside, and everything down here seems like a picture of American comfort. Of course, it's hard for me to convince myself that there's the mutilated body of a young boy upstairs. But there is. And I don't have to go back and look at it again to be sure of that. As the door swung open, the room was revealed in increments. I saw the rest of the bed and noticed that some of the dark splotches on the wall were also on the pillow. The whole room was cast in a stark light by the lantern, almost appearing to be black and white. Next, I saw the edge of the window and could tell that was what had caused the sound of breaking glass. It was a jagged, negative space from where there was no reflection. Just past that was the edge of a desk and a chair and a shape. A hunched, dark shape on the floor, crouched down low and moving restlessly. I could see legs sticking out from past its right side, motionless on the floor. Or rather, not quite motionless. Every few seconds they moved slightly, jittered. There were dark patches all around, pooled on the floor, on the desk, everywhere. The shape looming over the legs appeared to be human, bent low with its back to me. From the shifting contours of its shoulders in the stark lamplight, it looked to be doing something with its arms. I couldn't see what it was, the bulk of the shape blocking my view. Right at that moment, the door made a small creak as it continued to open on its arc. The figure immediately stopped moving. For a moment, I couldn't breathe. And then my instincts kicked in, and I moved forward, entering the room with the shotgun raised. "Don't move! Show me your hands!" I yelled, distractedly aware of the fact that I was giving contrary commands. I was about 5 feet behind the hunched figure, and still couldn't see much of what was in front of it. However, I could make out a tuft of hair and the top of a human head on the floor to its left. "Max!" "Put him up!" I shouted again and waited. I didn't know what to do. I couldn't just pull the trigger and shoot this person in the back. I was fairly certain that Max was injured or dead. But what if he wasn't? The shotgun was loaded with buckshot, and at this range, it would tear right through the hunched figure and hit whatever was past him, including the boy. The frigid air coming in from the broken window made me aware of every bead of sweat in my brow. The figure suddenly seemed to relax, its shoulders slumping. I heard a low gurgling rattle, like it was clearing its throat, and then it started to turn, still crouched. I realized that it was wearing some sort of long coat or cloak, trimmed with fur. There was a hat on its head, something that looked almost like a turban or a fez. It turned with its face away from the light, so I only caught it as a series of moving shadows. But there was something strange about it. It first looked to be the face of an old man, complete with a long white beard. I had just enough time to think, "Santa Claus?" Then the shadows shifted, and it almost appeared to be a beautiful woman. Then it changed more, resembling a cadaverous old witch. I was still trying to wrap my head around this when my gaze shifted past it to the boy on the floor. It was indeed Max, and it took me less than a second to realize, he was dead. The boy's shirt was pulled up, and his midsection was a tangle of gore. The lantern light gleamed off torn, wet flesh, slick intestines, and brief extrusions of white bone. This person had gutted him like a wolf guts its prey. The figure continued to turn, and now I could see one of its hands, fingers, long like talons, holding something. Suddenly the mystery odor I had been smelling clicked in place in my mind. Straw. Fresh straw, like what was in the barn at my grandparents' farm. The creature's claws was holding a handful of straw. I suddenly had had enough. I didn't know who or what this person was, but I knew that Max was dead and that this thing was responsible. In my terror and confusion, the shotgun had slumped toward the ground, but I now lifted it up to the figure and pulled the trigger. I can't quite describe what happened in that next instant. There was a deafening, flat percussion as the 12-gauge went off in the small room. For a second, I thought I saw the figure's clothing blow back, shredded by the buckshot, but at the same time, I saw something else. The figure somehow became insubstantial and grew larger. That's not quite right. It didn't grow larger, but spread upwards. It was like holding a light a distance in front of a small object in a small room so that its small shadow is cast on the wall, and then moving the light closer so that the shadow stretches and elongates. This person, this thing, it somehow did that. It spread out and grew and was clinging to the walls, to the ceiling, stretching across the ridges and protrusions of the furniture in the room. And then, almost too quickly to notice, it coalesced into one spot on the far wall and slid out the window. There's not much else to say. I, of course, ran to the window to look for the thing, but it was gone. I thought I could hear some noise on the roof, but it stopped after a moment. Max was dead on the floor. I briefly checked his pulse at his neck, but knew that it was a worthless gesture. The damage was too extensive, too obvious. After a few moments, I walked downstairs, shocked. Some time passed, and my brain slowly started working again. I decided that I needed to write all of this down while it was still fresh. First, I hunted through the kitchen cupboards until I found a bottle of whiskey, which helped settle my nerves. I saw that it was just after 2 a.m, so I sat and I drank and I gradually got a hold of myself. So, here we are. I need to get back to my place, clean up, and drive into town. Part of the reason I'm writing this down now is that I'm still not sure that this is all real. I wouldn't be terribly surprised to come back with the sheriff and find that things are different here. Maybe the kid won't have his guts torn open. Maybe all they'll find is a shotgun blast at his midsection. Maybe the body won't even be here at all. Whatever that thing was, it's still out there, and it might even come back. Who knows what it can and can't do? Seeing something like what I saw tends to shake your assumptions about reality. It's going to take a while for me to get to town, with the roads covered and snow and all, and I can only imagine that it's going to be a few very long days while this gets sorted out. As I mentioned, I'm suspect I'm going to have a hell of a time convincing the authorities that I didn't kill Max myself. After all, I'm just a recluse living out here in the middle of nowhere. I was alone with a kid. I had motive. Still, there's one thing that makes me think I won't be a prime suspect. Sure, the kid was a headache, and I had some sort of reason to want him dead, but why would I have wanted to stuff his guts with straw?
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Well, campers, what'd I tell you? Silence isn't always golden. It's the pauses in the noise that lets you know something's wrong. And that thing on the roof? Woo-hoo! Ryan, what do you think? Would you have gone upstairs with that shotgun or stayed put? Yeah, it's a tough call. Hey, Lizzie, first night here, and you get a story like that. Think you'd have faced down that, whatever it was, or run for the hills. Smart answer. Sometimes the scariest thing is knowing what's out there. Let's keep that chill in the air, campers, because our next story takes us to Christmas night itself, and a Santa Claus, well, he's had enough. Our second tale tonight is by Eli Pope, and it asks a daring question. What happens when Santa Claus has reached his breaking point? This isn't the jolly old elf you know and love, campers. This is a man on the brink. Here's The Night Santa Wasn't So Jolly. When are you going to stop moping around and get those elves of yours online? Christmas is around the corner, Santa. Put the bourbon down, pull up your pants, and get into the dang spirit of toy making. You got kids counting on you. Nag, nag, nag. That's all that woman does these days. A little incentive, Mrs. Claus, would go a long way. Maybe a breast poking through the red velvet, a little twerking of your big buns while you're out baking candies and cookies. Just saying, sometimes a man needs a little visual motivation. A little poke in the right ways and direction. I knew nothing would come of it. We were in a rut. Not a good rut, either, like my reindeer during mating season. As I attempted to sit up, the almost empty bottle of my Christmas spirits, labeled Maker's Mark, rolled over the edge of the bed and hit the floor, shattering into shards. Dang it! Broke from my lips like a well-practiced shot at breaking up the pool rack with my cue. I was in a hole. I was grumpy, tired, and, well, horny as hell. But I felt a little dumpier. I added a couple of pounds over the year, and I'm a little self-conscious about the dicky-do, if you know what I'm talking about. And, well, the missus isn't getting any friskier. In all the reflection, I totally forgot about the busted bottle on the floor as my round, swollen feet hit the wooden boards with a loud creak, followed by my very loud scream of obscenities. "Santa, what in the world's going on up in there?" She paused as she rounded the corner of the bed and saw the blood oozing into a puddle around my feet and the broken glass. "I'll get a towel, lay back down, and we'll clean you up." Of all the stupid. Yeah, I heard her true sentiments. She rounded the corner into the bathroom, still mumbling about how my age was becoming a problem. Something about early-onset dementia. She was such a hateful woman at times. After picking the glass out of my foot and wrapping it with gauze and tape, I painfully squeezed my boots on and gingerly pranced out to the kitchen. My head was throbbing from the bourbon, feet stinging from the glass, pride killed by the struggle of nearly losing the battle of my buckling belt, and to top it off, as fat as I was as hungry as a starving badger, ready to fight a 6-foot cobra for an overstuffed rat. Yeah, the holiday season was upon me. It may be time to retire this sweet gig. I hobbled out to the garage, wading through reindeer droppings, dodging the different clumps of feces. The sad thing was that I knew all my reindeer so well that I could tell which mess was from whom by its color and consistency. Sick, right? Well, after all these years with nobody else stepping up to the plate to take over, this is the life I'm stuck with, bringing joy to all the girls and boys for, like, forever. Always the giver, never the receiver. In today's world of not being able to discipline your kids without a DFS agent being called, afraid to hurt anybody's little Karen's feelings, and nobody wanting to fricking work anymore since COVID, but I digress. It was just about then that the smell hit me like a fart under the covers sent by Mrs. Chubby Cheeks herself. I looked down. Come on, Donner. Out of all these landmines willy-nilly laid over the entire yard, I have to land in yours? I shook my head in disgust as I fought the urge to puke, wiping my boot in the freshly swollen snow and then stomping it until the pain from the earlier shard's glass shot up my last nerves, and then dropping me to the ground and rolling me over to my back in distress. That's when I suddenly understood the mistake of my carelessness. I don't know if you've ever smelled reindeer droppings, but I can tell you it makes hard-boiled egg farts smell like roses in comparison. I lay on the ground, afraid to move a muscle. My life had literally gone to crap. What to do? What to do? This day could go from bad to dangerous in a New York minute. Mary! I shouted at the top of my lungs as my stomach attempted to refrain from throwing up from the smell of the dung I was most clearly wearing now. Like a Claude Monet impressionistic painting of brown excrement and red velvet. I pulled my belly up from the waistline just enough to slip my hand into my front pocket and fish my cell phone out. I gotta go on a diet, I told myself as gently as I could, while I fat-thumbed my wife's digits on the tiny number pads. The second ring, I can't believe it. I do declare. Honey, I got myself into a bit of a jam, sweetheart. Real doozy, for certain. I tried to calm my demeanor in an attempt to beg her to help, without getting the usual all-knowing women's aspect that I knew once she made it out here to help me up, I would receive in full dosage. This day's awful, Mary. I swear, this is my last year. I have to find my replacement before a full-on rage. I'm serious this time. I need to lay on a turquoise beach in Cancun, sipping brightly colored umbrella drinks and smoking Thai stick. It's time, Mary Jane Claus. I'll be right out, Chris. I know you're no longer the Chris Kringle I met back then. We'll figure something out, I promise. I sighed with a breath of relief just hearing her words of understanding. No, I wasn't Chris Kringle anymore. That man was 120, or 40-odd pounds ago, a once brown-haired ladies' man with a penchant for wild, crazy sex, with the aid of a drawer full of sex toys instead of a bottle of blue pills to bring things on the stiff. It's too bad I was shooting blanks all those years, because now I'm stuck with no son to leave this wonderful legacy with. I shook my head in dismay as I lay and stare at was once the equivalent of a hot rod garage, and I'm not even able to pick myself up on my own. And the smell, good grief, from gasoline to slimy grain. Oh, for the days of horsepower instead of organic and renewable reindeer energy. Bah humbug. Thanks to my wife, I was able to get up and change into more appropriate work attire, my black Harley-Davidson leathers. I grunted to myself as I caught a glimpse in the mirror. Even a fat bastard looks tough in black leather if he's sporting a long white beard and a few tattoos. I don't know how I caved into trading this in on red velvet with white fur. It must have been some sort of hidden agenda of Martha's, my first wife. She was always wanting to stand up for some underprivileged and misunderstood soul. After surveying the old sleigh in the garage, I realized I must have taken her out for yet another spin after enjoying some libation consumption last New Year's Eve over at the Grinch's place. Bent fenders and chipped rails. Must have attempted a dry run across the tundra to the North Pole Tavern before the last heavy snow. I had work to do, and I still had to give a stern pep talk to the now unionized elf laborers at the factory. Oh, good help is hard to find, especially with the union's restrictions on anyone over 39 inches tall. What's the world coming to? A man can't run a business anymore, even if it is a 501(c) nonprofit. Okay, toy, man, you laborers of elves, dang. I paused after botching my opening sentence as I looked at my CFO, Mrs. Claus. I turned over as I covered the microphone. What the hell do... How do I address our toy makers? All these regulations and rules. I'm not allowed to call them elves anymore. What the hell are they now? I mean, the Washington Commanders, for crying out loud? We all know they're really still the Redskins. All this political correctness. How about fellow talented toy manufacturing specialists? That'll make them feel as if they're not only valued, but also equal. Mrs. Claus smiled as she waved to the gathered employees before turning back and winking at me. Fellow talented toy manufacturers, dear friends, and, I quietly said the words, backstabbing profiteers, under my breath, before recouping my composure and continuing with, and practically family for all these years. I turned and rolled my eyes, thinking what they really were, yellow-bellied turncoats who had done what the rest of the country's workers had done. They united to boost their collective hold over production and growth, and after COVID, they used it to squeeze sympathy money from the government. It was all because of the commercialization of Christmas that led me to being shafted. Who in the hell was fighting for me? I'm still the one and only pissant with the balls, dangling over the barbed wire, dragging myself all over the world in one confounded night of joyous hell on the coldest eve of the year. Professionally, landing my vintage broken-down delivery craft under slippery rooftops, using a 9-member flight crew of creatures that defecated everywhere they're parked, while I alone dragged the bag of overpriced toys down tight and nasty soot-filled tubes that are usually still flame-filled with hot embers from toasting graham crackers and marshmallows while they get sloshed enjoying their vodka spiked hot chocolates. Merry Christmas. Bah, humbug. The Grinch was right. Before he bought into the well-plotted farce to put smiles on faces to mask the normal daily grumbles of life. You have been a well-oiled team of talent for many years. I stacked the mind-numbing BS on, thicker than honey on a queen bee's bed, in order to sweeten their egos enough to get what I needed this last year. And without letting them know that they'd likely all be out of work and living on Skid Row in Fairbanks, Alaska, by this time next year. It's crunch time once again, a time we all need to pull together and pool our strengths to meet this crazy demand of the holidays. I know we can do it. We somehow come through every year, and this one will be no different. I'm hoping for generous bonuses for all after we wind down. We are looking good for raises next spring, too. Yeah, I lied. I did what I had to do to get through this one last time. Mrs. Claus had finally agreed. We may look like two beached whales parked along the sandy shore this time next year, but we wouldn't be freezing our butts off at the North Pole, surrounded by ungrateful, collectively weaponized midgets holding guns to our pocket strings. Oops. I mean, talented tiny boogers. I mean, indigenous natives who dig a little deeper and push a little harder, create a little quicker, wrap gifts ever more efficiently, so we can all enjoy the day after Christmas and party like it's 2024 on New Year's Eve. I backed away from the microphone to the sound of tiny hands clapping from the joy of my empty promises. I'd managed to BS the masses one more time. Mary Jane had been correct. I am the master of a lie with a wink of an eye. Now, if I could make it through one more Christmas Eve without going postal, we'd pack up our junk and blow this pop stand and park our butts on a beach making sand angels instead of snow ones, enjoying Mai Tais and sunshine. Hell, we may even try some nude beaches, I winked to myself. The burn of the bourbon trickling down my throat felt perfect. I needed a few more snorts before I went out to give the BS pep talk to my hooved compadres. I attempted to picture each one of those moose-sized poop droppers as I continued to try and enjoy my maker's mark, picturing the waves rolling in as the sun morphed my stark white body into a bronze-colored retiree, wiggling my toes and listening to Mexican music instead of screaming, giggling kids while I visually undressed the already scanty-clad beach babes with bodies sculpted for, well, Kris Kringle, what are you doing here, schlepping down drinks while the clock's ticking down? The wife had just murdered my fantasy of what was to come. Would she kill my jam when we hit the beach, too? Some rethinking of bringing her along may have to be thought through thoroughly while sleigh driving this upcoming night. Wouldn't that make the headlines? Mary Claus found deceased, strapped to a rocking chair with a note containing two simple words. Adios, muchacha. Nothing can kill a beautifully dreamscaped fantasy that a man is able to conjure up, creating well-designed, naked, large-breast females parading around and catering to his every whim. More than a woman who knows your every weakness and physical insecurity. She broke into my dream again, but with more viciousness this time. Hey, Fatty, I'm talking to you. You ain't on that beach yet, Herculoins. I'm on it, dear. Just now, getting ready to talk to the beasts. Sell it, Santa. Sell it like it's beachfront property. Don't mess this up. I pushed through the stables with a special bag of oats to pass around. I could see the weariness in their eyes. They were getting old, too. I wasn't sure magic grass would do it this year. Boys, Dasher, Dancer, Prancer, and Vixen, Comet, Cupid, Donner, and Blitzen, and, well, Rudolph. I smiled. I always questioned if Prancer, Vixen, and Cupid were, you know, not he, she, deer. I mean, they did have antlers, but I digress. It's that time again. Tomorrow night is action night, our longest work day. I'm going to just say, go out tonight and enjoy a nice rack and rut, but save the final jelly roll for when you return. I need those sacks full tomorrow night, each and every one. I know we ain't getting any younger, boys, but we're still stallions, and I'm counting on us this one last time. We're a team. Team. Yeah. I don't see your sack swinging in the frigid mixture of snowflakes, Santa Claus. Donner, is that you again? I smiled as I twisted up a nicely rolled blunt and held it up to my lips before striking the match. This is your favorite blend, buddy. Pass the blunt, pass the blunt, the room chanted to the clap of hooves. Don't bogart it, Donner, I smiled as he stepped up to the microphone, snorting and clomping. I inhaled one large toke until my lungs sent me into a coughing fit. I don't know if you've ever heard 12 reindeer cackling in unadulterated laughter at your own cost, but I must say that it is highly addictive behavior. I don't care what people say about your cute little snow spots, guys. Your gay descriptive names, Prancer and Vixen, or your tougher macho Blitzen, you're all aces in my decks, boys. Wouldn't want to party with any lower life forms than you. This brought on a wave of snorts. I know I've said this several times in the past years, but I'm about ready to retire to a beach somewhere. Somewhere where nearly naked women who wiggle in all the correct places carrying colorful umbrella drinks to guys like us. I'm going to need good drivers to get me, and just maybe the missus, there. Who's game? I laughed out loud. Get it? Game? I laughed again. Oh, Santa, you don't really mean it, Rudolph eked out. You shut up. Rudolph's nose blinked on and off twice at Santa's mean-spirited statement. I took another hit and pulled myself up close to Rudolph's face. Don't you say a word of this, or I'll crack that bulb for good. Better yet, I'll replace it with a low-voltage LED in lime green so you can look like you're puking all day and night. I snorted and ended with another cough as puffs of smoke shot through my nose. Shh is the word, little fur donkey. I hate to have to make meatloaf out of you. Mama Claus hears nothing about this conversation. I gotta admit, the smoke must have been good because little Rudolph's dim, blinking red nose appeared like the front door of Frank's Den of Danger does on a cold, frigid night when the girls inside are all hot, sassy, and sultry. I felt a smile of warmth overtake my chubby cheeks and steer me to fleshy places of warmth.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Have you ever been so deep in la-la land that every sound, no matter how loud and obnoxious it may be, quietly reverberated around the room like an echo chamber of softened, squishy pillow sounds. I swear I was hearing the wings of angels fluttering in my ears when I finally fought the urge to open my eyes and see what was a clatter. After all, it was the night before Christmas, and as I squinted through blurred eyes, I could assume that nary a creature was stirring. I was burrowed in between big, huge balls of fur and long-hooved legs. And then the back of my hand slipped and slid between something I never could have imagined in a thousand years. Warm and sweaty, far too toasty to feel natural against the backside of my hand. I believe Donner's eyes snapped open every bit as quickly as mine. I suddenly felt like my hand was caught in the cookie jar with freshly baked dough balls. What the? I snapped as my hand shot quickly into my other. Is this what my life has come to? Partying until I was so messed up I held no recall. My mind attempted to quickly backtrack through the last hours I'd spent. My forehead became heated and flushed as rage grew quickly inside my psyche. I swear a flash went off across every garage wall that lit up like lightning. And then I heard the pitter-patter of tiny little legs with itty-bitty shoes scampering off through an open door. Was this a cruel joke my fellow four-legged sleigh crew had cooked up? Oh, my head! I cried as I stammered to roll my body over and attempt to fight the urge to puke as the membranes of my skull throbbed in pounding pain. It was almost instantaneous that the reindeer and I were standing in wobbling motion, attempting to decipher the moment. My hands cupped my skull as my eyes continued clearing the foggy blur from my watery eyes. This day was not jolly. It was supposed to be. It used to be. But it wasn't. Where was the missus? Had she let me spend the night in the garage as punishment for not listening, not being the leader that I used to be, and readying the troops for the mission? Had my brain finally reached the melting point and slid down my throat in a state of, I don't know, intoxication of sorts? Finally overloaded with so much pressure from the job, had I finally broken myself? I must admit that one hasn't truly come face to face with oneself until you find yourself blankly staring at a group of 12 reindeer you've just spent an evening getting stoned with to the point you're debating if you've fallen into another level of the void. I mean, who's ever done this before? I'm Santa, damn it. I create miracles every year. I can't even remember when it all started. What the hell just happened? My eyes searched each of the herds as they, one by one, turned away in shame. Only they could understand. We'd failed this year. Was Christmas really done? I stormed out and headed directly to my bug-out shelter. It must be Armageddon on the horizon. I'd seen it coming through the years. It was never big enough, never enough gifts, never joyful enough. People had become merely consumers. Me, me, me. The spirit had been mortally wounded for years. A slow bleed lulling us into ignoring its cries. Commercialism, corporatism, nationalism, Darwinism, speciesism. All of these isms. Maybe it's time to bring us all back down to bacteria, dirt, and rocks. That's right, to boys and girls. Santa woke up on the wrong side of the campfire this morning and isn't doing jolly today. I knew the whites around my eyes were far too big. I didn't need to look in the mirror to see the pressure of perfection had broken me this Christmas Eve. I couldn't believe I'd made it to this long. The naughty list had far overtaken the nice one. Years ago, it started with the baby boomers. Sure, the traditionalists, or silent generation, weren't free from guilt, but those boomers. I began loading magazines. My thoughts were no longer clear. Not that they really ever were. Jumbled and random thoughts bouncing around in my head like ladyfinger firecrackers exploding and bouncing from interior walls of my head. Amazon gift cards, Best Buy, Walmart. Nobody wanted handcrafted elf toys anymore. They didn't even want cash. Too lazy to even go out and pick something out at a brick-and-mortar store. Push a button on a keyboard and 2 days later, it magically appears at your doorstep. How can old-school tradition beat that? We bred our kids to want instantly. Begin to consume a craving earlier and earlier. You can't even get Halloween over with before corporate America begins shoving Black Friday and Cyber Monday down consumers' throats. Whatever happened to singing around the Yuletide fire? To cookies and candies baked by grandmothers with their grandchildren? I'm no innocent. I'm part of the problem. Hell, I just woke up jacked up from getting lit up with my reindeer. I'm loading up magazines like I'm reading for World War III. And it's not even on an Xbox in first-person POV. Are we even alive anymore, or are we just burnt-out brain matter and tissue hooked up into the Matrix? Inside my head, the battle was real. It was as if the nukes had already been launched, and I was merely reading myself for paybacks before it all ended. I couldn't tell you where it'd come from. Had someone spiked my weed? Or was it all the years of subliminally watching it all peel away from the onion with no one stepping up and calling it out? What was the point anymore? Where was Mary Jane? Whatever happened to Martha? You know it's five kinds of screwed up when Santa Claus is on wife number two and forecasting what retirement will be like on a nude beach in Mexico when you're already about 300 years old. What sweet young thing wants any part of that train wreck? There can't be any girl with those kind of grandpa issues. I began to smile with uneasiness as I threw the rucksack full of ammo over my shoulder, craving to go elf hunting like a sportsman shooting target clays. I don't even know why I was blaming the elves other than just telling myself they weren't real people, as if that made my thoughts okay. It all just seemed to make sense for the moment. Everything went white as snow. The mayhem felt real. There were feelings involved. It's not every day that the man responsible for Christmas' last act of kindness and love for the year takes the turn it did this year. Nobody saw this one coming over the hill. It was actually brave of Rudolph to attempt lighting his way to warn the village. He gets an A in my book for his valiant efforts. Who'd have ever thought he'd one day attempt to save Christmas all by himself? I can't say I really remember a whole lot. The night didn't seem to last like all the others had in the past. In fact, it seemed almost over before it began. I always wondered about regret. When you do nothing but good, there is, of course, no reason for regret. But when you go rogue and take your vengeance out on what you can later tell yourself was innocence, well, that makes quite a quandary to contend with. If you have any humanity left inside of you at all. I know one rarely thinks about Santa Claus in any other way than fat, jolly guy dressed in red and white who brings joy to everyone in the middle of the night. If you really think hard about it, though, what have you been teaching your kids all along? It's okay for a hot, sweaty old dude to sneak into your house at night and eat your cookies, as long as he leaves a pleasant surprise for you at the base of a dying tree in your living room. You gotta admit, it's already started out a bit on the twisted side of things. So, should one really expect something in that equation can finally, inadvertently go a little off the margin of acceptable? I'm no medical school graduate. I'm just a guy who hangs out all through the year with pointy little-eared people, short people, who deny even exist in any fashion other than a cold-top secret world at the North Pole. You allow me into your homes one time a year where I'm allowed to get in any way I can, A chimney, a fire escape, a magic hole in your rooftop, while my overabundantly loaded sleigh with 12 400-pound reindeer lamb. And you don't even make any attempts to call the cops, as long as the only missing stuff from your cozy home is a cup of milk and a cookie or two. And I'm the crazy one. You preach this story over and over, lying to your kids to lull them into a fantasy so unreal that even corporate America jumped on board because you're all so gullible they couldn't believe how easy it worked. You'll even sing songs about me and say Merry Christmas 100 times each year before the actual day arrives. I gotta know one thing. This year, while I'm lying on the beach, soaking in the rays, my beard shaven clean, my tattoo's now very visible, so I look nothing like that crazy bastard that lost his mind this year. What are you going to tell your kids? How can you voluntarily own up to this big happy lie that's been perpetrated on them to the point you have them denying that I'm not real and that I really do somehow break all the laws of physics and logic and can travel, indeed, over the world in one single night to spread happiness and joy to a world that absolutely hates everyone in it on any other given day of the year? How'd you do it? Or gonna do it? I'm at a loss here. I don't even know how I got to this beach. Did I crash from the sky in my sled and wash up here? It's like a dream I can't even seem to remember. In fact, I can't even really feel anything. No fear, no pain, no happy or sad. Simply nothing. I just exist. I now wonder if I even did anything. All of these questions that seem to float in and out like butterflies. Christmas Day, 2024. KMBC, Channel 4, breaking news, here on what was earlier a very unnerving scene for many on Venice Beach's boardwalk. I'm Kit Bannix, reporting to you live on scene here in Oceanside, where an AR-15 wielding man began threatening to take shots. After police came on scene, the as-of-yet-unnamed suspect did take 2 hostages and held them for several hours this morning in a surf rental shack. He claims he wiped out his North Pole toy factory along with Mrs. Claus. His further claims of his toy-filled sleigh being shot from the sky, leaving him stranded here in California, have not been substantiated. He had asked hostage negotiators to bring cookies and milk, along with a quart of eggnog, before he'd be willing to release the hostages. SWAT teams surrounded the area, then stormed the shack, once they realized the 2 hostages he claimed he was holding were merely wild dogs, whom the deranged man claimed to be 2 of Santa's reindeer. Hang on. The information I was just given is being corrected. It seems the man SWAT apprehended was claiming that he is Santa Claus, and he's now apologizing for ending Christmas once and for all. What's that, Alex? He said what? You're kidding me. Should I report this? Again, listeners, Kit Bannix with KNBC Channel 4 breaking news here on the Venice Beach boardwalk on Christmas Day. It's being reported that a man has been apprehended after witnesses saw him with an AR-15 just before breaking into a surf rental shack. The suspect claims he is Santa Claus and apologizes for wiping out the entire North Pole toy factory. He's claiming there are bodies of elves scattered throughout. We're going to go to break and report back as soon as this story can be substantiated. Cut the feed, Mitch. My God. Only in L.A. can a story like this cut into the holiday. I need a drink. Happy holidays, and yes, it's still a holly jolly Christmas. The best time of the year. Well now, campers, what'd I tell you? Santa might have delivered gifts in the past, but this year he was delivering something a little darker. Lizzie, you've got that wide-eyed look. Don't worry. I don't think Santa's swapping a sleigh for a tank anytime soon. And Dylan, what about you? Think those reindeer were innocent or just as twisted as he was? Either way, I don't think we'll hear them jingling down the chimney anymore. Both of tonight's tales remind us, campers, whether it's a snowy night or a festive season, the scariest monsters are the ones we think we know. So keep your wits about you, and don't forget to leave a little extra milk and cookies out, just in case. Well, that's it for tonight, my friends. Thanks for joining me, Ryan, Janice, Dylan, and Lissy. I'll see you next week, same time, same place, right here by Twilight Lake. And remember, you never know what might be lurking in the dark or waiting for you when the snow falls.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest. Life comes at you fast, which is why it's important to find some time to relax. A little you time. Enter Chumba Casino. With no download required, you can jump on anytime, anywhere for the chance to redeem some serious prizes. So treat yourself with Chumba Casino and play over 100 online casino-style games, all for free. Go to ChumbaCasino.com to collect your free welcome bonus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.